This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. I am on the road to Chattanooga, Tennessee, as the MUS Owls will take on the Baylor School. That game you can hear on 790 The Bet. Pregame will start at 5:45, airtime at 6 p.m. George Ruggiero is producing the program. He's back in studio. My company today, he's the host of VSiN Primetime, airing weeknights each and every weeknight. He's also the host of the number one college football pregame show in America. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate. You can watch that tomorrow on VSiN 9 a.m. Also, VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. He's on Twitter at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Are you driving right now?
Oh, yeah.
You're freaking me out, man. This is frightening.
Oh yeah, we're zooming it up. I've got one current teacher from MUS. My eighth grade English teacher sitting next to me is our SID, and we're eastbound and down, baby.
So you're in the car, but you're not behind the wheel.
Oh yeah, I got my headphones on, baby.
Oh my god,
got the headset on.
A man of any talent.
This is how the magic's made, baby. Listen, everybody wants the seat. You can't give it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, man. It's what's the line tonight for your alma mater?
So you have to factor in running clock. I would say, Coach Torrey, what, 28? What's the realistic line?
I would say 28.
Yeah, about 28. Maybe they'll throw a hook in. But, yeah, 28. 28 and a half, probably.
Oof. All right. Well, best of luck to your alma mater. Hey,
Northern Illinois won
as a 28-point dog, and I'm reminded of it every day from people on social media. Notre Dame stinks. They lost to Northern Illinois. So maybe you could be Northern Illinois.
I mean, if we're going to do the unthinkable, it has to be basically the exact same game plan, which is we just control the clock. We're super efficient on third downs, and we play keep away from them, get a turnover or two. Like, that's the formula, but, you know, hey, that's why you play the games.
Well, I think that, yeah, hey, that's what I'm sure the coach is saying today. And I think my big question with you being a man on the road is, are you going to go cone of silence and not find out what happens tonight in Jake Paul, Mike Tyson? Are you going to be streaming that on the side and giving the people the updates? Because that's the event all anyone can talk about right now is Tyson versus Paul tonight at Jarrah's World.
Okay, so what time is the actual
No match? Idea.
Is there a full card?
Yes. There's actually, from my, the boxing people in my life have told me that the fight prior to Tyson and Paul is actually a really good fight. It's a championship fight. So Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor for the women's junior welterweight title. So I don't know. My gut tells me that it will be starting in that like 9 o'clock time central, if I had to guess, but I really have no idea. It's definitely got an undercard.
So that's the case, if we want to watch, we'll have the option. I don't know. I guess this is what's fascinated me about this fight. Now, I've mentioned it earlier this week, but I don't know if I've mentioned it to you. I cannot remember another sporting event that garners more attention but less mainstream attention than that fight. Because Giannotto said that when he writes about the fight, it does Super Bowl numbers. And this is clearly like a massive thing, but it's like, I don't really feel like it hasn't really penetrated like the zeitgeist of the sports media world.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, because this week is when it kind of ratcheted up for me, just from a gambling standpoint, talking about it at VSiN, talking to odds makers about it. And then yesterday, I really started to notice how big this fight was going to be here in Las Vegas. Because it's on Netflix, everybody can run it. So every sports book that you drive past here in Las Vegas, whether it's the local sports book, you know, just down the road from me, Circa downtown where I work, the Westgate Superbook kind of just off the fringe of the strip, I'm sure all over the strip, like everywhere you go, you're going to be able to see this fight, which is unique, right? Because when you talk about McGregor versus Mayweather, I remember going to a bar actually the line was so long at the one bar that held that was going to have the fight. I just said, you know what, forget it. I'm just going to go home and order the damn thing. But the fact that everybody can watch this is added to the level of interest on it. And then you had yesterday with the old, you know, makeshift slap, which I am totally not buying. That was completely, you know, to build up the hype of this fight. But look, you've got a guy in Jake Paul. What I think too is interesting regarding this fight is that generations are involved in this, right? You've got folks who loved Iron Mike Tyson at his peak, probably in their 40s, 50s right now. You've got a younger demographic, high school, college kids, fresh out of college that know Jake Paul and everything that he's done on social media and now into boxing. It's just garnered this unique interest level from so many different generations, as crazy as that sounds. And to me, from a gambling standpoint, I think it's opened up an opportunity to for some value. Earlier today, I laid 200 on Jake Paul to win this fight. Like, as amazing as Mike Tyson is, and I keep seeing, the dude hasn't fought a sanctioned fight in 19 years. Like, he's 56 years old. And the first fight, Jeffrey, was postponed because he was sick. Like, the dude is old. So, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be distraught if Mike Tyson won, but from a betting standpoint, I bet Jake Paul.
Well, I mean, there's kind of an element of, you referenced the McGregor Mayweather fight, but like, who was it? I remember somebody coming in, because I think Mayweather was like minus 300 at the time, and some guy just came in and laid like 2 million on him.
Yeah, that was before I moved out here, the McGregor Mayweather fight, but it is in like Vegas lore, because everybody was putting down cash on Mayweather, and it really opened up an opportunity for one of the easiest bets you could ever possibly make. And you had to lay a heavy price, but you were laying, you know, I don't know what it was, if it was 300, 400, whatever it might have been.
I think it was right around minus 300.
Which is an absolute joke for, arguably, I don't like the dude as a person, but he's arguably the greatest boxer ever. I'm not a boxer connoisseur. Yeah, but he never lost. All right, let's just put it that way. And he was fighting a UFC guy in the ring with it was a no-brainer. You know, interestingly enough, every sports book across the country is going to be cheering for Jake Paul, because people are going to get involved. And when you see the prices, which are currently out there, It is Jake Paul is around a – it's up to minus 290. So for those unaware of gambling lingo, you have to put down $29 to win 10 bucks. But on the flip side, if you want to bet Iron Mike Tyson to beat a YouTube sensation and Jake Paul, you put down $10, you win $24.50. There's going to be a lot of people betting on Mike Tyson in this spot, and I think every sportsbook is going to be very happy if Jake Paul wins it.
Okay, so the only thing that gives me a little hesitation is he had a match, he being Paul, it was one of those Miami fights, and everybody thought, like, oh, he's finally going to get a boxing win, and he lost.
To Tommy Fury.
Yeah. Then the other thing is, how sanctioned is this fight? Because from what I saw from Iron Mike, Iron Mike has found the gas.
How much gas does he have, though, right? And that's the question.
Yeah, but he looks juiced out of his mind.
And Jake Paul, it looks like he put on some LBs for this fight, too. So, look, I'm very curious to watch it. It's 8 rounds. It's only 2-minute rounds. So, I think that's a benefit to Mike Tyson. The fact that it's only 2-minute rounds. I also think if you want to go conspiracy theory, and Derek Stevens, the owner of Circa, was on my show last night, and at the time, the draw was like plus 1250, and I could definitely see some wackiness going on to ensure we get Tyson Paul Part 2, maybe get a controversial draw after this one. So I know it is sanctioned. It's not sanctioned in every state, though. You can't bet on this in every state. So I'm not sure if Tennessee is one of those states that you can bet on this fight. I know Colorado, you cannot bet on Tyson Paul. So yeah, there has the potential to be some serious wackiness to this fight tonight. And it started yesterday with the made up slap on Jake Paul to ratchet up the interest on it. You know, I think this has the potential to be kind of a weird and wacky fight. I don't know if Tyson's going to bite his ear, though. I don't know if he's going to go back to that level.
Well, did you see that? He did the interview with the
little girl.
The little girl. And, like, Mike Tyson has basically, like, gotten to, like, his Ecclesiastes stage of life. Like, he's like, we're all going to die. Everything's meaningless. There's nothing new under the sun. Like, he was very... I'm going to die. I don't care about legacy. It's like, okay. And props to the young lady that did the interview. She's like, I hadn't heard that before. And then my Iron Mike went back for a little bit more to like finish off the promo.
Yeah. Pretty, telling you, man, I don't know how Netflix makes its money off this, but everybody's going to be watching tonight. And, I think they've done a decent job building it up, especially this week. And here's the thing. It's Netflix. So if you can't watch it live, can't you just watch it later tonight? So when you get home from Chattanooga after your alma mater shocks the world and wins as a 4-touchdown underdog, made-up line, maybe you sit down, you have a nice beverage, and you watch Jake Paul take on Mike Tyson.
I guess the other thing is it's like, the one thing about boxing is, like, Iron Mike doesn't have to be great for 8 rounds, but what if he just lands a shot?
I think that's what a lot of people are anticipating. I think a lot of people are betting on the fact, and you can bet on when, how a person's going to be knocked out, when it's going to happen, all of this. I mean, there's so many different ways to bet on this fight tonight, and, for Mike Tyson to win in round one is 12-1 right now. I'm looking at DraftKings. Like, I think there's a belief out there, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree. If Mike Tyson were to win this, doesn't it feel like he has to like come out of the corner like he used to do and just be throwing haymakers and try to land one and knock him out?
The only thing you could talk me into is if he starts like feeling him out and kind of, all right, he's going to basically take it easy, kind of like Mayweather used to do, using the Mayweather example, and starts feeling him out and then realizing, all right, this guy's not a prized fighter. Here's where he's vulnerable. I can get him, later with the one. I'm going to get one shot. I better hit it. You could talk me into that. Like, he waits to strike on that. And basically, you could talk me into it being a boring fight for a long period of time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm looking at this quote, going back to the gambling side of things. Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight is on track to be the most bet boxing match in BetMGM history. We're starting to see action on Paul, but Tyson's still popular with bettors. The worst result would be a first-round knockout by Iron Mike. That courtesy of my good friend Patrick Everson, who covers all things gambling news from someone over at BetMGM. So, look, sportsbooks are going to be thrilled by this. You've got an enormous weekend. I'm sure last night, if I had to guess, was probably pretty good for the books. I think Washington was, I guess I don't know from a side standpoint, but the total went under, so that's probably good for most sports books. And then you've got, you know, Georgia-Tennessee on Sunday in prime time, and then you've got Bills taking on the Chiefs on Sunday. Like, the sports books are going to be flooded with bets this weekend, and this event is going to be an incredibly highly bet event tonight at Jarrah's World.
All right, so let's get into the weekend. I think let's start with Georgia-Tennessee.
Yep.
And again, been on the road. Do we have any other update about Nico? I suspect we won't. I don't think we're going to know until tomorrow.
Well, as my buddy Stucky put out on social media, his sources tell him that Nico will and won't play this weekend. Yep. I think Zenit's over at is he at On Three? I can't remember where he's
that
at.
That sounds
currently.
Right.
He's pretty plugged in and basically gave us the update that we still don't know, but they seem optimistic about him being available on Saturday night. So I'm under the impression, that he will play. It's a concussion, so you never totally know. But, you know, we could dive into this game more. I'm sure we will. But I just think Georgia defensively is just going to be running around like their hair's on fire. And I think Tennessee, you know, we saw it last week, and I was thankfully didn't bet it, but we saw the desperation from one side and not so much the other in Ole Miss, Georgia. Georgia loses, adios playoff, adios season. And, you know, you think back to Kirby Smart and how he's used motivation in recent years, right? Before the TCU game where he had them believing that no one was, you know, believing in them when it was ridiculous. They were a 14-point underdog. Does he need motivation now? He could just put up the graphic of the current playoff field and say, you're not in it. Like, I think this is going to be a incredible effort from Georgia. The reason why I've gotten a little creative, and we'll get into our betting cards, I'm sure, later with this game, Jeffrey, is that I can't trust Carson Beck not to turn the ball over. Like, I like Georgia to win this game. I like them to win by double digits, which would mean I like them to cover. But I think I'm more confident that the Georgia defense that we saw against Texas is going to show up Saturday night, and it's going to make life hell for Nico or whoever their quarterback's going to be.
So I pretty much agree with what you're saying, because like what we've started to see in college football is much more of the NFL approach, where it's like, all right, who's the hungry dog? Hungry dog runs faster. And we've seen that pretty much throughout the year. Georgia against Texas was a great example. As you mentioned last week, Ole Miss against Georgia. The thing that gives me concern, though, is I know Carson Beck's taken a lot of heat, and there's no doubt that he's not played great. They got bigger problems than Carson Beck. They cannot block, and the same thing that holds true for Tennessee, which is I'm not sure how great Tennessee's going to block Georgia. I mean, right now, like for lack of a better word, the left tackle for Georgia sucks. He Yep. didn't block anyone, and I think Tennessee can very much mirror what Ole Miss did. I think I like Ole Miss's defensive front a little bit better than Tennessee's, but that's not an insult to Tennessee's. I think Tennessee's is going to give them a lot of problems. And so then it starts to become a question of, all right, where has Beck truly been terrible this year? Well, he's been terrible when he gets heated up. And we already know no Etienne. So now they've never been able really to run it all year. Like, I just think this kind of becomes like really rock fighting. Like, this to me just screams game of the century, 2011, LSU, Alabama, where I don't know if really either team is going to be able to move the ball on each other.
I could see it. I have more, as crazy as it sounds, the thing that I trust the most is Georgia's defense heading into this game and the fact that they're home. It's going to be juiced up. The atmosphere is going to be great. And then, you know, let's look at, and I know we could do this almost with every single team this year in college football. It's, you know, the who have they beaten? You could do it with Texas. You could do it with Penn State. You could do it with a lot of teams this year. I look at Tennessee, and obviously they've got the nice win over Alabama, but you think about the performance they had against Florida, where they were fortunate to win that one. You know, they get beat up by, they get lose to Arkansas on the road. Like, do we trust that this Tennessee team can go on the road to one of the most hostile environments in college football at night and get this win? Because when they've gone into hostile environments, you know, and they did beat Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not very good and had a terrible quarterback in that game, but that was their biggest challenge on the road this year. They beat up on NC State. That was a neutral site. There was plenty of Rocky Top fans there. I think this environment, I'm just curious how they're going to respond on the road in front of a raucous spot down there between the hedges where they know it's over if we lose.
I guess, though, the only thing that's also giving me a little hesitation is Tennessee kind of in the same spot? Because it does feel to me, and again, who knows? There's so much more football, and we have more rankings, and then, you know, in the end, none of these rankings we see right now matter. It's going to be the last one. But at least it just feels like Tennessee, if they take this loss, they're going to be on the outside looking in, even though I don't think that's right. Like, I just kind of wonder, like, what if Tennessee's in the same spot of like, all right, boys, let's not leave it to the benefit of the doubt. Like, you go and win this game, and you've got to beat Vanderbilt to get into the SEC championship game, and Vanderbilt's like getting more wounded by the day. So, like, what if Tennessee's kind of in the backs against the wall spot too?
I mean, I think they are. It's not as clear-cut as Georgia, but I'll just ask you this question. All right, both of their backs are against the wall. Who do you trust more? And as crazy as it sounds, Carson Beck being allergic to throwing it to his own team, I trust Georgia in a desperate spot more than I trust Tennessee from what we've seen this year. Look, Georgia, you can knock for their loss to Ole Miss and the loss to Alabama, but let's also recall that they beat the third-ranked team in the country handily on their home floor, on their home field. They, you know, their defense shined against Clemson early on in the year. If they played now, would it be 34-3? No, probably not. But I think we've seen how good Georgia's good is. And for Tennessee, prove it to me, man. Like, go into Georgia, win this game. I mean, it's crazy to think about how these schedules have shaked out this year, where Georgia is going to end up through 12 weeks of the season playing number 3, number 7, number 10, number 11, and number 20 in the committee's eyes. And then you look at Texas, Penn State, and Indiana have a combined 0 wins over top 25 teams. It's crazy.
I guess the one thing I keep coming back to, because for the most part, like, I tend to agree with you, but
how did
also
Georgia drop 9? You know, you and I on Tuesday were trying to figure out where Georgia would go. They dropped 9 spots for losing to Ole Miss and Miami. I get it was their first loss. Miami dropped 5 spots, losing to Georgia Tech with a 50% starting quarterback and lost their starting running back in like the committee, man, and it's early, and you said it, like, they'll figure this thing out, and I trust that things will kind of get sorted out, but, like, nothing makes sense. Like, why is Miami ahead of SMU? There's real no reason. SMU's loss is significantly better. They've got common victories in both beating Louisville. Like, a lot of this just is, it makes no sense. Texas is number 3? Why? What do they do? Penn State, by the way, of the current 12 teams that are in the projected field. Penn State, zero wins over a top 25 team. Oh, but they've been crushing everyone, right? No, they're 4-5 against the spread. So I get it's gambling lingo versus what they've done, but like, I don't understand the love affair with Penn State. I really don't get that whatsoever. I have no idea why Penn State is ranked 4 ahead of an undefeated Indiana team. Why? Because they scored 0 offensive touchdowns at home against Ohio State. That was really impressive.
So we've had a – this is one of the best times on Twitter right now because we now have got like arguing about college football. So you get to see everybody's going to be listing show me so-and-so's best win. So we're at peak that. I think the simplest answer is on how did that situation arise is in the end, Alabama and Ole Miss both beat Georgia. So they're all sitting there with the same record, and you're going to have to come up with a way to justify putting Georgia ahead of them. So you couldn't do that. So, all right, you've got to put them behind those two teams, and then you've got to kind of justify. It's like, all right, are they going to move up Alabama and Ole Miss? Because I think they kind of have to package those three teams together. And it feels to me like they just kind of punted and they said, well, this is what's going to be fascinating to me. If Georgia wins this game like you suspect, is that going to be enough ammo to jump past Ole Miss and Alabama, two teams with two losses, but both have the head-to-head?
It's a great question, man, because Ole Miss has a terrible loss. But they beat Georgia. Like, what matters more?
Convincingly.
Convincingly beat Georgia. Georgia will have a win over, in the eyes of the committee, the third best team in the country, convincingly on the road, and now a win over Tennessee, a top 15 team, who beat Alabama. So you got this whole circle. Tennessee beat Bama. Georgia, in this theoretical situation, beats Tennessee. But Bama beat Georgia. So it's just like it goes in this big circle. And, you know, it, as much as they would never say it, the committee, I believe, is just saying to themselves, whatever, drop Georgia 9 spots. They play Tennessee this week. It'll figure itself out. And that's what it basically is boiled down to, is like, yeah, it'll figure itself out. We'll be fine here.
But, and the reason I think they have Texas where they do is because Texas is just leading. I think everyone's kind of trying to read too much into it. I think everyone's doing the, oh, it's the brand. It's what. No, it's just Texas is literally leading the standings. And so that's why I think they have them where they do.
I tell you what, man, if Georgia beats Tennessee, which is they are favored to do, right, 9.5-point favorites in that spot, and then on Thanksgiving weekend, Texas A&M beats Texas, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen, because we would have a two-loss Texas, two-loss Tennessee, two-loss Bama, two-loss Ole Miss, two-loss Georgia, and a two-loss Texas A&M with now a win over Texas. I mean, if you want chaos and you live in the South, in Tennessee, and SEC world, my goodness gracious. Like, boy, are we going to get people fired up.
Have you seen, I don't know if you know Matt Moscona, he's a radio guy from Baton Rouge. Do you realize, basically, if the schedule plays out the way that it does, if LSU wins out, and if Arkansas beats Missouri, and then if Texas beats Texas A&M, if it goes chalk, now granted, that's a lot of ifs, because that's what we've seen in college football, like needing it to go chalk. But basically, those are the two key results. LSU, with 9-3, LSU would be in the SEC championship game. We'd literally have we'd have our first ever 12-team playoff. We'd have our first bid thief conversation.
Yeah, because if they win that game, they're in. They're the SEC champ. You're they're not technically the AAC champ and Mountain West champ could be ranked ahead of them. That ain't gonna happen. But I hope that doesn't happen because LSU, man, you proved it to me last week. Get out of my face. You lose 42-6 or whatever it was to Bama on your home field. You get pantsed by another running quarterback. Like, move on. Get out of here, LSU. Go enjoy the Citrus Bowl on New Year's Day.
All right, want to remind you that, of course, right now one of the great sales in the city of Memphis is going on. It's the Black Friday sale at Robert Irwin Jewelers. That means that you can buy gifts that give gifts. Buy a 1/5 carat diamond hoop earrings in 10 carat white gold. That's $549. Get a free pair of JBL noise canceling headphones. If you want to get engaged, because of course this time, massive engagement season. If you spend $49.99 or more on the engagement ring, you can get a free 85-inch smart TV. So you can buy gifts that give gifts during the fantastic Robert Owen Jewelers Friday sale. Also do what I did for my wife's engagement ring. You can custom design your own engagement ring. And by custom design, I mean my wife sent me three pictures. I went in to Howie, this is what she wants. And then he went and made it work for me. Came in under budget, tremendous shipping experience. Even if you're uncomfortable with the whole process like I was, you will have complete peace of mind at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Five great locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Free financing, bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. When we come back, let's talk about this game and more from the SEC. We'll do it with Blake.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week. He's on Twitter, on X, at BTopmeyer. All right, Blake, let's talk about this Tennessee-Georgia game. We've been talking a lot about it at the start. Tim sees it as if this is Georgia's opportunity to do what Ole Miss did to Georgia last week. I fundamentally agree that that's possible, but what if Georgia's kind of telling us what they are, which is they're just not going to be that good on offense?
Well, I think they are telling us what they are, and I don't think they're that good on offense. And I think Tennessee, I'd had my reservations about their defense early going, but I'm convinced at this point. I think Tennessee's defense is pretty nasty. They're pretty disruptive. I think Tennessee's defense is legit. The thing that I keep going back to, though, is, Georgia hasn't lost at home since, the 2019 season, when a not very good South Carolina team beat them that year. So it's been 5 years since Georgia lost at home. I know this is not those past Georgia teams, but I still think that the environment's going to be tough on Tennessee. We know over the last few years, Tennessee's much better at Neyland than they are on the road. So I kind of like Georgia in this game, but I don't like them, to win the same way Ole Miss did. I mean, that was an absolute beatdown last week from Ole Miss. I don't know that Georgia can put a beatdown on Tennessee, because I think Tennessee's defense is good enough that they're not going to get blown out. But in a defensive struggle in Athens, I guess I kind of like Georgia.
When you look at the quarterback position, we're still up in the air whether or not Nico will play. But under the assumption, Blake, that Nico does play and clears concussion protocol, what can we realistically expect from him? He didn't play well on the road against Arkansas. They haven't had a road game since then. He played fine against Oklahoma, but didn't really light the world on fire. So, I talked about this to start the show just from a betting standpoint. I didn't bet Georgia. I just bet Tennessee to go under their team total. What kind of what can we expect from Tennessee offensively? Because I would imagine, Blake, Georgia is not going to allow or try not to allow Dylan Sampson to do what he's been doing basically every single week this year, which is go for over 100-plus yards.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that's the key, right? You make Nico beat you. That's what that's what Florida tried to do a few weeks ago when Florida gave Tennessee all they could handle was they were going to try to make Nico beat them. And actually, kind of Florida beat themselves in that game to a large extent. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be the toughest face, toughest test Nico's faced in his career. When you combine the opponent, even though this is not Georgia at its best, still, when you combine the opponent with the environment, it's going to be a real test for Nico. I mean, I covered the game 2 years ago when Tennessee was ranked number one in the country and Georgia won by two scores in that 2022 game. And it was really, really loud and hostile that day. Like, I'm one of those people, I don't think, you know, on an average day, Sanford Stadium is one of the louder stadiums in the SEC. I know there was actually kind of some drama, some controversy. A Tennessee radio personality said that about Georgia leading up to the game, is that they don't think Sanford Stadium is one of the louder SEC venues. And I think that's actually, on average, spot on. I think that's true. But 2 years ago, that place was as loud as I've ever heard it. And I would expect that to be pretty similar to that on Saturday night and what amounts to an elimination game for Georgia, night game. Yeah, this is going to be the biggest test by far Nico's had. I mean, I know he's played Alabama, but that game being at Neyland Stadium, it's a totally different scenario. And Nico, let's face it, he didn't play great against Alabama either. He made enough of the big throws in the second half against Alabama, but it was really the defense that got it done against Alabama, and Nico did just enough in that game. And if Tennessee's going to win this one, I think they're going to have to do it on the backs of their defense.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Blake. To me, Sanford Stadium is a lot like Bryant-Denny. When they decide it's a big game and they're going to make it a big environment, that place is deafening. But the average game, it's kind of a wine and cheese crowd. Like I'm with you. And to me, this screams of they will be deeming this a massive game.
Absolutely, you're so right about Bryant-Denny. That it's a good comparison. They are two of the more similar stadium environments just in terms of crowd noise, because I've always thought that about Alabama. It's like, it's usually not one of the loudest stadiums in the SEC. Where it was different was, and exactly to your point, the game against Georgia this year. I mean, that place was roaring unlike any game I've ever heard. And I've been there for some LSU games. I've been there for Tennessee games. Bryant-Denny was next level for the upset of Georgia. And I think that was part of the reason. You can't subscribe at all to that, but I think that was part of the reason why Georgia was so shell-shocked in the first half and looked so horrible. I mean, it was one of the most daunting environments I've ever covered a game in, and that's not the way Bryant-Denny usually is. That's not the way Sanford Stadium often is, but I would be very, very surprised if it's not that way on Saturday night. I think it's going to be pretty rocking tomorrow night.
Blake Topmeyer joining us here on the program. Blake, Missouri and South Carolina, if you had to tell people what's the other top 25 matchup this week, I don't think many people would know it was Missouri-South Carolina. South Carolina defensively has been unbelievable as of late, and they get Missouri. I know Brady Cook was listed as doubtful. My guess would be that he's out for this one, and if so, if it is Drew Pine, how does Missouri have any sustained success offensively against this South Carolina defense?
Yeah, I don't know that they do. I mean, you know, the records tell us that these are similar teams. The rankings tell us that these are similar teams. I think our eyeballs, even when Brady Cook was out there, frankly, but certainly without Brady Cook, but even on Missouri's best day, these have not looked like similar teams to me this year. I think, you know, Missouri is getting by on its schedule, whereas South Carolina's played one of the toughest schedules really in the country when you add up everybody that they face. And I think South Carolina is legitimately pretty good. I mean, they are a better quarterback away, I think, from having an extra win or two. I mean, Sellers has has looked good in flashes this year, and if not for his injury against LSU, they might win that one. If he would have played better against Alabama, they could have won that one. I mean, their defense has been good pretty much wire to wire this season. I think this is a really, really tough matchup on Missouri, and I think it's going to show just how much, like, Missouri's been masquerading, you know, as a good team, you know, I guess an upper half of the conference team throughout most of the season, when I actually think they're a bottom half of the conference team. They're not in the cellar. They're not Mississippi State. They're not quite Auburn. But I think they're closer to Auburn than they are to South Carolina. I think South Carolina is just legitimately pretty good. They're a defense that nobody wants to face. And right now, Missouri on offense.
All right. I think we might have lost Blake there on that
I'm
one.
Back,
so
guys. Yeah, sorry. I think I cut out.
Oh, there he is. Blake, but yeah, you were cutting out there. But yeah, I mean, I look at this situation here for South Carolina. Yeah, I mean, we could get into now the scenarios, right, of the SEC. And boy, if South Carolina, a couple calls go their way, they could be another two-loss team. But I mean, how is this going to play out? And Jeffrey and I started the show about the current situation and the rankings. And, you know, a lot of it's much to do about nothing right now. We'll see how it all plays out. But boy, the SEC's got a realistic opportunity brewing where if Tennessee loses to Georgia, like I think you and I both think will happen, you've got two-loss Tennessee, two-loss Bama, two-loss Ole Miss, two-loss Georgia. Texas plays A&M to wrap up the regular season, and I can only imagine, you know, the headaches that the SEC could be having if A&M holds serve at home Thanksgiving weekend and beats Texas. The committee's going to have quite the challenging decision because there's not going to be six teams in the college football playoff from the SEC.
No, there's not going to be six, and I'm still not convinced there's going to be five. I think five is back in play now, given Ole Miss being back in play, but there just may not be room for them, particularly, you know, depending on how Indiana holds up in 2 weeks' time against Ohio State. If Indiana's in, there's not going to be five spots for the SEC, let alone six, I don't think. So, yeah, it's going to get pretty tight pretty quick. I mean, you were rattling off all the teams that could finish with two conference losses in the SEC, but how about this one? It is a very realistic possibility. I'm not telling you it's likely, but it's also not a total long shot either, that the SEC championship game could be Texas A&M against LSU, an LSU team that we've realized by now, they're kind of a fringe top 25 team, you know, hanging out down there in the bottom of the top 25 rankings. I think that's who they are. They're not terrible, but we don't think they're a playoff team at this point. Well, LSU's still in the running to get to Atlanta. And then if you win there, you are a playoff team. And nobody at this point is penciling LSU into the field. And I don't know how many people are penciling Texas A&M into the field. So if either one of those two teams gets to Atlanta, it's a chance for them to steal a bid, and it'll be at the expense of somebody else, probably somebody else in the SEC. The best place to be right now is either, obviously you want to be Oregon, right? You're number one in the country. But I really think the best place to be might be Penn State. Like, Penn State's in pretty good shape to make the playoff. They're not. If Ohio State beats Indiana, they don't have to play in the Big Ten championship game, so you can rest up on conference championship weekend. You can rest your case at 11-1, and you could say, give me the sixth seed, thank you very much. I'll host a first-round playoff game. I'll rest up on conference championship weekend. And then I'll go take my chances against the 3 seed, which will be either from the ACC or the Big 12, probably, in the quarterfinals. I mean, really, Penn State, other than Oregon, I think is like the greatest spot to be in this playoff bracket, because they can get the 6th seed in the playoff without even having to play in a conference championship game.
Blake, do you think if we get that LSU situation, because I referenced it last segment too, because Matt Moscona of ESPN Radio on Baton Rouge pointed it out. I mean, basically what you need is you need Arkansas to beat Missouri. And if Drew Pine is playing, that's not that insane. And basically you need chalk. And I think you need Texas to beat. I think you need Texas to beat A&M.
Yeah, I think so. That's right.
And then it's like, you know, because of the weird tiebreakers. if LSU gets to the championship game, do you think that forces the SEC to have to do something about how they are picking the representatives of the championship game?
I think if LSU wins the championship game, I think that's what could tip the scales. Because I actually think there's a lot of coaches who don't want to play in the SEC championship game. If you have a playoff resume and you can just rest your case, know you're going to the playoffs, you know, you think you're probably quietly, you know, you're not going to say this out loud, but you think you might lose in Atlanta anyway. You don't want to have to go put it on the line again, take another loss, get banged up in Atlanta. So if LSU goes and then loses, I think there would be a lot of coaches that would say, like, okay, you took the bullet for us. Thanks for that, Brian Kelly. And now you can go play in the Citrus Bowl and we'll go to the playoff. Thanks for making sure we didn't have to take those hits in Atlanta. But if LSU were to win the conference championship game and steal a bid, and so they're knocking someone else that arguably could be more deserving in the SEC out of the field, I think that's when you would have the scenario of a lot of strong arming of, hey, you got to take a look at these tiebreaker rules in the future. So I don't know that LSU just getting there would change it, but I do think if you had like an LSU winning, then you're going to apply some heat and there's going to be some pressure to relook at how they do this. I mean, really, it's kind of counterintuitive, but I think a good argument could be made that the best way to determine the conference championship game would be to just go by college football playoff rankings. The conference standings, sure. Like, if the standings sort it out, or if the head-to-head tiebreaker sorts it out, then you go that way. But if you had to go past the head-to-head tiebreaker, I really think that the fairest thing to do would be to go from head-to-head to the next tiebreaker is just whoever's the two highest teams in the CFP, those are the teams playing in the conference championship game. The whole thing with getting rid of divisions, part of the argument was, oh, it's going to give us the two best teams. I'm not sure that's going to be the case in the SEC, that we're actually going to get the two best teams in Atlanta.
You know, Blake, we talk so many scenarios, and we've got three more weeks of the regular season to sort a lot of it out. But I'm so intrigued by Indiana and BYU because they're both undefeated. Indiana has obliterated everybody except Michigan this past weekend, but they have Ohio State waiting in the wings. You know, we'll start with Indiana. What does Indiana, in your opinion, have to avoid at Ohio State? Obviously, a win, it's settled. But if they lose that game, do they have to avoid getting blown out? Because I still think there's a shred of doubt out there regarding Indiana because they're 10-0 and they're behind an 8-1 Penn State team that doesn't have any good wins either. So do you think Indiana, what needs to happen for them in 2 weeks to avoid getting knocked out? Or if you're an SEC fan, which I'm sure majority of our listenership is, you know, what are they hoping for? Are they hoping for Ohio State to embarrass Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana, I think, needs to play well in that game. I think there's a lot of Indiana fans this week saying, you know, they can lose to Ohio State and they're still in. They saw that number 5 ranking and they're saying, the committee loves us. We're good if we lose to Ohio State. I'm not convinced of that because we've seen that this committee, much like past committees that we've had in the CFP, they can be pretty schizophrenic from week to week. And, you know, what they thought 1 week, they can do it in about face based on one game. I mean, we saw that with Georgia. Georgia went from being number 3 last week to losing on the road to a good Ole Miss team. Yeah, they lost decisively, no doubt about it. But they dropped 9 spots in the rankings. If Georgia can go from 3 to 12, then Indiana can go from 5 to out of the playoff field if they get beat decisively by Ohio State. So, yeah, I think if Indiana's competitive, if that's a close game, if that's a game in the fourth quarter, if the committee can tell itself Indiana could have won this game, I don't think Indiana has to win to get in the field. I think they have to play well. They have to make it competitive. Otherwise, we could see them take a huge tumble. Because at that point, you know, for now, I think the committee's been willing to overlook the strength of schedule because it's like, well, they've been playing great. Well, if they come out and they just get defaced, then it's sort of you lose your argument to overlook the strength of schedule. Then I think the strength of schedule really comes back into play, and it's like, okay, when they did go up against a really quality opponent, they showed us who they really are. So, yeah, I think Indiana needs to be competitive. And if you're a Tennessee fan, I mean, first and foremost, you're rooting for a win against Georgia, right? But your other hope, I think, if you're a Tennessee fan, is Tennessee looking a lot better on the road against Georgia in defeat than what Indiana might look in defeat next week. That's the other hope for Tennessee fans. I think Tennessee could still get in over Indiana, even though they're ranked behind Indiana now. Like I said, that can change from week to week. But to do that, I think Tennessee would need to look good against Georgia, and Indiana would have to, you know, get trounced by Ohio State.
Well, and then the other aspect about all this, I know football teams don't really think this way, but if you're Ohio State, let's say you're up 14, and you know that as long as we don't turn this bad boy over, we're going to win the game. Or maybe let's say you're up 10 and you're in the same spot because you just know Indiana can't move it on you. They can't score. Let's just get out of here, and we're going to save all our points for next week when we have our exorcism against Michigan and we take out all of our frustration in that. Oh, by the way, that could end up screwing the SEC a little bit too, and we'll have one fewer good team. We'll have one team fewer that we perhaps could give us an L. We know what we can do with Indiana.
Yeah, like you said, I don't know that that's like a front-of-mind situation, but I don't entirely rule out that that's like something in the back of mind. If you think you got it in the bag of, do we need to rub salt in the wound here and knock Indiana out of the playoff? And I don't know if so much of it from a coaching standpoint would be like the Big Ten pride thing, but I think it's the latter thing that you said, the idea of like, you're not worried if you have to face them again in the playoff. You know, if we got to go up against this team, we got them. We've already showed we got them. And so, yeah, I think that could be like a back of mind thing for you. Feel like you got it in the bag. There's no need to take any risks. The only way Indiana can win is if you hand it to them, turn it over. And, oh, by the way, this also preserves the chance to get a team in the playoff that you know you can beat. Yeah, I think that at least, you know, in your subconscious might affect you a little bit as a coach, which actually, if I was predicting how it was going to play out, we may talk about this more next week, but that's kind of sort of what I, looking ahead, what I think is going to happen. I would pick Ohio State to win that game. I don't think it's going to be a total blowout, and I can see the scenario that you're talking about in the fourth quarter where Ohio State's up by about 10 points, and they're like, yeah, we're good. We got this. Let's take the air out of the ball, let the defense carry it across the finish line, and don't throw any pick sixes.
Blake, before we let you run, I just wanted to circle back to the BYU situation. I think they lose here to Kansas on Saturday night, but if this team were to be able to maneuver the rest of the schedule, what type of scenario would we be looking in? Would it be the same thing about Indiana if BYU is 12-0, wins over SMU and Kansas State, and lost, let's say, by 3 to Colorado? You know, is the committee really going to knock them all the way out of the field? Is there a chance that the Big 12 in that scenario, once again, I think Kansas beats them this weekend, but look, they've defied a lot of logic this year. Could we see a scenario where two Big 12 teams get in if BYU, who, let's be honest, their resume is better than Indiana's right now. It's better than a lot of teams. They've got two top 20 wins on their ledger. Is there a chance we see two Big 12 teams in if BYU is able to run the regular season?
Yeah, I do think there's that chance. I think, you know, it's interesting when the rankings came out this week, there had been so much blowback over BYU last week. I mean,
whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.